and welcome to Climate Queens. This is a podcast to raise awareness about the effect that we as humans are having on our shared planet and what we can do about it. We'll be covering everything from what even is global warming, fast fashion, the minefield that is recycling, and everything in between.
We are no experts. We are just two Dublin gals who met volunteering and have been best pals ever since. So who are we? Katie is obsessed with the outdoors, with a background in food marketing, but her ultimate passion is to save the world one step at a time with a cup of tea in hand.
You know me so well. And Clodagh is a plant-loving, social entrepreneur, climate activist, who is a big fan of hot beverages also, and sea swimming. So join us on the last Friday of every month to channel your inner climate queen. And don't forget your cup of tea.
Or coffee.
Welcome to the A to Z of sustainability. Myself and Clodagh have decided to collate loads of words relating to the environment and to sustainability using the alphabet as a guide, because otherwise, let's be honest, we would be going off on too many tangents. So, you know, knowing us and how much we love to chat, this will most likely be a two-part episode, and perhaps you'll recognize some of the words and others might be completely new, as we learned so much researching for this. So, speaking of words, I don't know if you guys knew this. Did I know this? Yeah, I think I did. That the 2019 Collins Dictionary Word of the Year was, dun dun dun, climate strike. So climate strike is defined as a form of protest in which people absent themselves from education or work in order to join demonstrations demanding action to counter climate change. Woo, 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 woo.
That is a definition, all right. Yeah. But yeah, it's really hard to ignore the mass protests for the environmental movement over the last while, and it's really gained momentum over the past year or two. So, I mean, one can only imagine what the 2020 word of the year is going to be.
Oh my gosh.
In the environmental space. But, you know, it's really gained traction. And actually, Katie, do you know what the year 2018 word of the year was?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't want to be negative. I was going to say like fossil fuels or something really awful. Was it like hugs?
Hugs, free hugs. I mean, that's a good one. It's single use. So 2018 was like a hot topic for plastic. So they literally put in single use, which is, you know, these environmental words are slowly entering into our daily vocabulary. So we really thought it'd be helpful for you guys to do an easy explainer for some of the other climate related words that you might be hearing throwing around. So this was inspired really by The Guardian's move last year to change their guidelines for the journalists and editors. Really to follow what to say when reporting on the climate. So like, for example, they decided not to use the word climate change because we know the climate is changing. And they said that they are no longer using this phrase as it does not accurately reflect the seriousness of the overall situation. And I think that's very fair because, yes, it's a climate crisis, it's a climate breakdown, it's a climate emergency. So when you hear these words, like that's what we should be using.
Exactly. And as important as words are, so are our actions. And what better letter to start with than A at the start of the alphabet with activism.
Activism. Yeah, literally like start at the very beginning. So I guess activism can be a scary word for some people, but we really, you know, we do have an episode on climate activism, which you can go check out and listen to. No plug, I love it. So actually last month we did a video with Goal education series for Global Sparks, and they're highlighting the sustainable development goals, all 17. So really we actually did a little 2-minute video on activism, so please do go over to our Instagram on the IGTV. It's just a 2-minute video for you to watch. But really, activism comes in many different forms. And if you can act on something, then really you're showing that you care. And this in itself is political. Your art, your voice, your words, your dancing, you know, whatever your area is, like you don't always have to come to the streets to take action when it comes to the climate. But really, if you care about the climate and environmental justice, then you also care about social justice, and they are intrinsically linked, and you cannot have one without the other. Like, we can't stress that enough. Just before we kick into the A to Z, we wanted to briefly address what's happening in our world right now. Not only are we in a global pandemic, but we are seeing so much injustice across our planet, especially towards people of color. And right now in America, Black people are being disproportionately targeted and murdered, and this is happening all over the world. So I know some people might be in the mindset that these protests are maybe too far, but please realize that property can be replaced and a human life cannot. Mm-hmm. And that is the bottom line. Racial inequality is still very much real. It exists at every level of society, and this is a systemic issue that needs to change. Mm-hmm. And I know for myself and Katie, as two Irish white women, honestly, we can't even begin to imagine how this must feel, and we understand that we can never understand. But what we do know is that we can take action and do so much more to be actively anti-racist. And I think this is such a learning and maybe an awakening for some white people at the minute. So, you know, we can use our voices and encourage others to raise theirs, especially by generating conversations, you know, starting with your own friends and family. Like, let's have it out. Let's have the tough conversations with family members. Let's do the reading and reflect and learn and take that, you know, emotional time and space to unpack your own privilege. Mm-hmm. And also ask yourself why, I think, is really important. Like, why has it taken until now for things to get this far, for you to do that emotional work and that emotional labor? So I guess what we really hope today, that you as a listener, wherever you are in the world, that you can join us in this promise to show up for Black people and people of color and those who are being disproportionately affected by climate justice right now. We actually came across a lovely few words from Leila F. Saad, who is the author of Me and White Supremacy. I know a lot of people have a long book list right now. And so please go check out her work and you can support her directly. But she just wrote this really lovely few lines called Black Life Matters, as in Black health, Black wealth, Black success, Black joy, Black breath, Black love, Black anger, Black laughter, Black creativity, Black abundance, Black peace, Black ease, Black well-being, Black self-expression, Black community, Black culture, Black safety, Black protection, Black leadership, Black history, Black self-determination, self-definition, Black individuality, Black truth-telling, Black humanity, Black existence. And I think it's just so beautiful. It's literally like Black Life Matters, and it's really sad that we have to, you know, we have to take it so far, but really our hearts are truly broken, and there are so many names on the list right now that have died and have been killed, you know. And right now we've got a highlight in our Instagram of resources that you can access now, and it's long, okay? It's heavy, and please do take the time to do the work, like respect other people's boundaries, and most importantly, don't forget to listen. So that's a nice little light topic to start off with.
Yeah, but I think it's really important, and you know, this episode will be coming out at the end of June. I think, you know, normally when myself and Claude are planning for an episode, we're like, okay, what's going to be topical? Like, what will we make sure that's top of mind for people? And I think it's really important to note that this is something that is a forever battle. Yeah. That this isn't going to be something that at the end of June we're no longer talking about. We need to make sure that that doesn't happen, that it's something that we will always be talking about and having those tough conversations. And I came across, I mean, I don't know about all of you guys, but I've been down an Instagram hole, and I'm not one for spending too much time on Instagram, but I've just been desperately searching for information. And I found this post and it's on an Instagram page called Black Magic Woman. And I just thought it was really, really good in relation to, you know, people's actions and, you know, just overall, it's about not stopping. So it says, some are posting on social media, Some are protesting in the streets. Some are donating silently. Some are educating themselves. Some are having tough conversations with friends and family. A revolution has many lanes. Be kind to yourself and to others who are traveling in the same direction. Just keep your foot on the gas. Yes. I just loved that. I thought it was just, it was so true. So
it is. Because whatever area you're in, like, just keep going. You know, use your strengths and your power, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes, thank you for listening to that part.
This is heavy, but, like, guys, this is real. And, like, you know, we mightn't have hundreds of millions of people listening, but, you know, we care about what you think, and we hope you really can join this, because this is a together issue. We have to do this together. And I mean, it's June, it's Pride Month, you know, like, Black Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, like, you know, everything is relevant. So just because it's June, like you're saying, we won't just end, stop talking about it, you know. So keep the conversation going.
We can do
it. That's all we can say.
Okay, guys, so another A that I thought was a good one to slot in is one that perhaps you might have heard of. I just want to throw it in because it is one word that I have not forgotten from my master's this year. And I don't know, is it because it sounds like another word? Let's be honest. Anyway, it's called the albedo effect. Yes. So essentially, albedo is a measure of the reflectivity of a surface. So the albedo effect, when applied to the Earth, is a measure of how much of the sun's energy is reflected back into space. So overall, the albedo of the Earth has a cooling effect. So how I describe it is, so if you look at the Arctic, the polar regions, full of snow and ice, which is white, and that reflects the sun's rays back out and the heat away. So that's working for us in terms of reducing global warming. But what's happening is, as the ice is melting and the snow is melting, it's revealing kind of, you know, darker surfaces underneath and reducing the albedo effect, which means that the sun is, and the heat of the sun is then being absorbed into the Earth's surface. So that's also known as a positive feedback loop, which is, sounds kind of counterintuitive if it's positive, but it's actually working negatively towards global warming, if that makes sense. But yeah, so, like, if you think of, you know, in hotter countries, they have their, you know, loads of white buildings to reflect the sun. That's also the albedo effect working there.
Oh, yeah. Never thought about this. Not gonna lie, I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Yeah, I hadn't before, but I was like, oh, that's the word for that thing that we all just kind of knew but didn't actually know.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Hmm. Okay, good start. Good start. I guess B is your biodiversity, right?
Yes. So we felt biodiversity was a very important term to discuss. So what does biodiversity mean? So there's a few different definitions, but I found one on Green Schools Ireland, which broke it down very simply in stating that the meaning of biodiversity is very easy to understand when we break the word down into bio, which refers to life and living things, and diversity means just that, range or variety. So the word refers to, you know, the huge variety and variation of life that surrounds us on the planet. And it's really important that we keep it thriving. I also found a really nice definition as well with the Guardian. So they say it's the variety of life on Earth in all its forms and all its interactions. And apparently the term was coined in 1985. And they also describe it as, like, the contraction or the mixing of the word of biological diversity into biodiversity. And I just thought it was interesting in that they said a more philosophical way of viewing biodiversity is that it represents the knowledge learned by evolving species over millions of years about how to survive through the vastly varying environmental conditions of Earth. and what Earth has experienced. And seen like that, experts warn humanity is currently burning the library of life. I'm like, whoa. But isn't that kind of beautiful? The library of life.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, you hear like, oh, biodiversity loss. And you're like, what is that?
But I know.
Again, okay. Loss of life and range. Okay, great. I know. We're really on it today.
Yeah. But yeah, I know. It's a lot.
It is a lot. I guess my B is for biodegradable.
Chestnut.
Yeah, so I'm kind of putting B and C together because biodegradable and compostable are just words that people are like, oh, but it's biodegradable, so it's fine. But so what? Okay, can you make sense of this? Okay, biodegradable material is not necessarily compostable, but compostable material is always biodegradable.
Is this a riddle?
Yeah, I know. I was like, what? Okay. So compostable material is always biodegradable, but I think biodegradable refers to the ability of things to get decomposed by the action of microorganisms like bacteria or fungi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the without oxygen or with oxygen that absorbs into the natural environment. So there's no ecological harm during the process. So I can imagine if you are wearing a jumper, 100% linen, there's no chemicals in the dyeing process. Maybe it was, you know, a turmeric dye and, you know, real natural. And it wasn't, you know, coated in a fire resistant chemical. Technically, if you put that on the soil, it would really degrade back into the soil,
mm-hmm.
but it would take a very long time to do that naturally. And I think the word biodegradable can be confusing because if you imagine you go to get your lunch, getting your bits of bobs, maybe you've forgotten your takeaway items, no shame, but you pick up say like a plastic container, but it's maybe bioplastic and it says I am biodegradable, that can be put into like mechanical process. But if it says then it's compostable, then it has to go into your compost bin. So if you're on the go,
where are you gonna put it?
Access to that. So it's really counterintuitive. And so really it's about thinking that everything needs to go and be processed in the right environment. So compostable is different as the process is sped up by humans. Okay, so it's still biodegradable, but it's like more of a natural process where substances are broken down, and that could happen within a year with the correct level of heat and oxygen. So I guess you might hear people talking about their own wormeries. That's all composting, and that could go back into the soil. So really it's about, you know, there's a difference between industrial composting and home composting.
So much.
It's just, there's a lot, but mm-hmm. basically just check the labeling, because I think that is something we're going to talk about later, and it might be confusing and some might call it greenwashing. But really, compost.
Yeah.
Compost is the thing. And if you maybe are living in an apartment and you don't have access to that, you can have home wormeries. I don't know how comfortable I'd be having
loads of worms indoor just chilling. Wormery,
but that's a possibility. Or contact your council maybe to see, because I know a lot of people don't have access to food bins, and we even have our episode on food waste.
Yeah.
And it is an issue. So definitely.
And I think a good thing to say as well is that if you have, you know, taken packaging from a restaurant, let's say, or a cafe, ask them if they're giving you the biodegradable or the compostable packaging. They really should know where that goes. Can they take it back? Do they know where to dispose of it? You know, and have that conversation. I think that's really important. You know, in this era at the moment of the pandemic, our reusable containers, unfortunately, have had to stay at home, which you can totally understand. But hopefully we'll get back to normal at some point. So obviously in that situation, you're hoping that you can refuse the biodegradable and compostable packaging. Mm. Just bring your own.
Yeah.
But fingers crossed we can get back to that.
I actually did see, the first tangent.
This is tangent. Tangent, number one.
Sirica from the Conscious Cook campaign posted about a cafe that are doing, you can bring your reusable. And they put it on a board and then they put it under the plastic coating. and then they make the coffee, they make it in another cup and then or like a jug, and they pour it in and they just push the board back under, so no one has touched
nobody has touched the cup.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I mean,
that's commitment.
It's a highly oiled machine there.
That's commitment with possible. A capital C.
Yep, that's it. What's your C?
My C. Okay, are you ready, guys? We're talking climate action plan. Ooh. So this is really important, especially for, well, it's for everybody. And I'm sure if you're listening throughout the world, you'll have your relevant climate action plans. But this is specifically for Ireland. So the Irish government recently published its climate action plan in 2019. The core objective of the plan is essentially to enable Ireland to meet its EU targets to reduce its carbon emissions by 30% between 2021 and 2030, and essentially lay the groundwork for achieving net zero carbon emissions by 2050, which is incredibly ambitious, especially considering our current trajectory. Mm-hmm. The plan outlines the current state of play across sectors, including electricity, transport, built environment, industry, and agriculture, and basically charts a course towards ambitious decarbonisation targets. So the plan sets out it's 183 actions that need to be taken, and this extends to all the sectors of the economy. So we'll put a link to the Climate Action Plan, or CAP, in our show notes if you fancy some casual reading of a weekend. I would recommend checking out two other pieces if you are interested, and this would be less work than reading the entire Climate Action Plan. It's the Annex of Actions, which is also part of the same link, which details all of the 183 actions, because really that's what we all want to know. What is our government actually going to do? And they've also committed to publishing a quarterly progress report detailing the status of each of these. So the first of these detailing the progress made in Q2 and Q3 of 2019 was published. And they say that 149 of the 183 actions were delivered. Really? So yeah, it's trying to keep track of that and make sure that they're not kind of reframing certain things to make it suit them. And that sounds very cynical of me, but
you got to be cynical with that. Like, you're saying starting from 2021, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and 30%?
And net zero by 2050.
I mean,
so we have a lot of work to do. Okay, what have you got for D?
My D is downcycling. So
You've
all heard about recycling. But downcycling is the process where, like, unused products are recycled into new items of lesser quality. So some items can be, like, repeatedly be reproduced. So, like, glass, 100% recyclable, you know? It just keeps quality every time. So that's really good. But imagine you finish using, like, your plastic bottle, and it finds its way to the recycling bin, gets on the recycling truck, goes through the recycling factory, and it kind of comes out, the material is crushed into pellets. And these pellets could be repurposed in a new form. So they might end up as a fleece or like something as mattress filler. But every time that happens, the end product, you can't then turn that fleece back into pellets.
Yes. You know what I mean?
Basically, downcycling is like you've recycled it once and mm-hmm. it's reached its end of life. So it's not the circular economy, which I know you're going to be talking about.
Yes.
So really, does that make sense that downcycling can only be recycled once?
Once. Yeah. So it's less, is it lessening the quality?
Yes. So every time you recycle something, so like some plastic bottles can be recycled, if you know, a few times.
Mm.
But really, if you're going into pellets and into fleece, you know, there's a whole issue with textile waste recycling. We won't get into that. Like,
and another tangent.
that's more of like a chemical and mechanical recycling that
yes,
we get into. Okay. But downcycling is just once, recycled once, and then reaches its final destination.
It's end of life. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. My D, I feel like mine are just down in the dump letters. So
You're the truth teller.
Oh, thank you, Clodagh. That's so nice of you to say. So I have chosen deforestation. And I found, let's be honest, we all know what deforestation is, but a formal definition of it is the permanent removal of trees to make room for something besides forest. So, you know, this can include clearing the land for agriculture or grazing, or using the timber for fuel, construction or manufacturing. Forests cover more than 30% of the Earth's land surface, according to the World Wildlife Fund. A few kind of shocking statistics. In 2018, The Guardian reported that every second, a chunk of forest equivalent to the size of a soccer field is lost. Every second. So deforestation occurs when forested area is cut and cleared to make way for agriculture or grazing, but also apparently there are four commodities that are responsible for tropical deforestation. So we've got beef, soy, palm oil and wood products. And then just the last two pieces, according to National Geographic, 80% of Earth's land animals and plants live in forests. And deforestation threatens these species, including the orangutans, the Sumatran tiger, and many, many, many species of birds. So, yeah, you know, this exact thing is threatening, letter B, biodiversity. So, yeah.
That literally ties in perfectly with my E.
Oh, okay.
Which is ecocide.
Oh, my jeepers. That just sounds really sad.
It is, because it is basically ecocide is the destruction of the earth. Literally what you've just talked about.
Yeah.
All of those things. So formal definition is the extensive destruction, damage to or loss of ecosystems of a given territory. So whether by human agency or by other causes, to such an extent that peaceful enjoyment by the inhabitants of that territory, i.e. humans, orangutans, you know, tigers, you know, that territory has been severely diminished. And I know that people have been trying to put ecocide into legislation as laws, as we know we all need legislation across the board, especially when it comes to climate change. Sorry, the changing climate. Mm. I should have to correct myself. Climate crisis, gotta get it together. But, you know, really, as a whole, we are not protecting our ecosystems. We're at risk. And I didn't want to get into it, but I read recently that we're on the verge of the sixth mass extinction for wildlife. Mm. So literally what you're talking about there, it's really, really relevant.
Mm. But let's go to more positive. I feel like this is swings and roundabouts, swings and roundabouts. So with E, I've also taken some, what's the word? I forget. Yes, that's it. Thank you. And gone for economy and just said circular economy, which is positive and something that we can all look to achieve. So myself and Claude have spoken quite a lot about the idea of, you know, a linear system or linear economy, specifically in our first episode, again, another plug on fast fashion. But the linear economy is one in which our current world is operating in. It's the dominant method of consumption, use and disposal. So, you know, the linear economy is also known as just simply taking something, using it and then disposing of it. Whereas the circular economy is this utopian future that we're all just hoping for.
Oh, so ready.
I know, where everything stays in circulation and never ends up as waste. For example, products are made with their end of life in mind. So they are made to be durable and last, but they are made in such a way that they can break down and go back into the earth, you know, a compostable item, for example, or, you know, it can be easily made into something else. And instead of throwing something away, we're reusing it, we're repairing it, we're rewearing it and caring for what we own. So that's essentially what the circular economy is all about, in summation.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's a very clear, concise, compact.
Why, thank you.
description there. I can't remember who said it. Was it Annie, someone? Oh, I can't remember now to quote that. But it was like, we never really throw anything away. Do you know?
It's like, it stays on the earth in some capacity as waste.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we were talking about like, all like your toothbrushes as babies still exist somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like great. That. Anyway, sorry. My next one is nice.
Preface, it's nice.
So it is nice. My F is for forest bathing, which just sounds so luxurious And it is literally as it sounds. So forest bathing is known as, Shinrin Yoku. I don't speak Japanese, so I apologize.
That sounds good.
Shinrin Yoku translates to forest bath, which is basically nature therapy. And its roots are in Japan. And it's all about spending time in nature and taking in the forest through our senses to bridge that gap between us and nature. So it has so many health benefits. It helps you find your calm, you know, slow down, reconnect with the natural world, what we should be doing. And hopefully we can all find some more time for nature as all the restrictions start to ease in different places all around the world. And actually, one of my favorite things I found in the forest is all about crown shyness. Have you heard about this?
No, you are educating me a lot in these sentences.
Okay. So my friend read this book called The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Waldheim. We'll link it. Actually, the study of trees is called arboriculture. Isn't that nice?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Trees, they're respecting each other's boundaries, okay? Imagine you're in a forest canopy, in the forest, and you're looking up at the trees above you, and they cover overhead, and there are all these little channels of light coming down. Do you know, like river channels where the trees are intentionally making space for one another? Like, literally called tree, like crown shyness, because the trees are like respecting their boundaries. And it's so that the light will come down for the trees underneath the canopy. And I just thought that was so lovely.
I'm not emotionally able for this.
I was like, oh no, this book, like, apparently is just, it's fantastic. It's all like about like how trees like send each other water under their roots. And like, they're literally like having chats. And I was like, oh my goodness, I just thought it was so lovely. And the sentiment, like Kaylee's face right now is like, what? that we can all make space for one another. And I just thought that was something we could learn from.
Oh my God, Coda, please, can we go forest bathing? Please. No. I want it so bad. It sounds amazing. Even the way your voice was saying that, I was like, I closed my eyes, I was looking up to the canopies, like, oh, that light is shining.
But anyway, you know what I'm talking about, that like lovely, like little fractions of light that come in. I know.
Okay, why does my F have to be this? Well, you know, it's necessary. Okay.
What the F?
Fossil fuels. That's what it is. So this is definitely a word that I took for granted in knowing. Before we even started Climate Queens, I was like, oh yeah, fossil fuels, but never really thought about what that is. And it was only when I listened to an episode of Mothers of Invention, when Maeve, one of the co-hosts, spoke about the word fossil, and it's like something just clicked with me. So simply put, fossil fuels are exactly that, fuel that is made from fossils. So over centuries, you know, plants, animals, and other organisms have decomposed beneath layers and layers of sediment and rock. And over millions of years, they've become these carbon-rich deposits that we now call fossil fuels. So these include coal, oil, and natural gas. And according to National Geographic, they supply about 80% of the world's energy. So they provide us with, you know, electricity, heat, transportation, while also feeding the processes that make a huge range of products, from steel to plastics. So, you know, we all know the plastics are made from oil.
Hold on now. I didn't know that for a long time.
Okay, well, there you go. Actually, you're right. I didn't know that either for a long time. We all know.
I was like, yeah, plastic. And then I was like, oh, that's like petrochemical. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, and polyester.
Yeah, and when you're saying fuels, like fossil fuels, I was like, we're like burning dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, that's like, it.
That's what's happening.
That's it. And we are taking it out from the ground where it should stay. So, but why is this bad? Because when fossil fuels are burned, they release carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, which in turn trap heat in our atmosphere, making them the primary contributors to global warming and climate change. So keeping fossil fuels in the ground is absolutely paramount to our activism and our struggle.
Back to the A.
Swinging it back to the A.
Well, you're right. At the marches and stuff, you might hear people say, keep it in the ground.
That's
what they're talking about. Keep it. We don't like leave let's stop destructing the natural world. Let's leave it be. Yeah. Okay, G. I mean, yes, you talked about greenhouse gas emissions. Mm-hmm. I guess prevalent G is the global warming. But really, we have an explanation on this and greenhouse gases on our other episode. We've got a little repertoire, don't we? I'm just referencing all these, but it's getting hot in here. So if you want to go back and listen to that. So I kind of wanted to touch on greenwashing.
Interesting, yes, and important.
It's just, there's so much fake news right now, and the environmental movement definitely is not an exception to this. So greenwashing is disinformation disseminated by an organization so as to present an environmentally responsible public image. So, you know, it might look bright and shiny on the outside, but inside, you know, it's wrong to the core. Could it? So if you ever like bought like a cleaning product that says eco clean or like eco chic, like I've definitely bought something that said like eco and I was like, yeah, cool. And I just grabbed it.
Sold.
Like literally, I was like, great, great, great. And then I got home and like, it was the label, like literally the label was made of paper and that's recyclable. And then like you might have bought like a mixed, the plastic container might have been like a mixed plastic and actually mightn't be recyclable. And you're like, oh. So that's greenwashing because they're giving the illusion that it's good, but it's not. And so it's like a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I know online right now, there's a lot of greenwashing happening with fast fashion brands. And they're really jumping on this green bandwagon, you know, with t-shirts like, save the planet. Like, okay, but like,
what are you doing?
What's the t-shirt made of? And like, who made that t-shirt and were they paid fairly? And you know, how far did it have to travel and how much excess stock was made that had to be burned, you know? So it's really about rethinking that thing of like what we're buying, like you're saying, like rethink how we shop. And you know, just remember that paper doesn't refuse ink, you know. Just because it says something does not mean it's true. So
I love that, Clodagh.
It's like, just because they said it, it's not real. So as we always say, do your research. And it's easy. It's easy just to say, oh, that's grand. Yeah, that's compostable or whatever. But then you're throwing that compostable thing into the general bin and that's creating more issues. And you're like, it's a lot to think about.
I know. I was literally about to go on another tangent, but just quickly, I just remember in my whole process of like realizing the detriment of fast fashion, and I was kind of straddling that thing of like, but I still want to shop, but I can't morally. So I was like going into Zara and I found that they had like their kind of eco-friendly range, like made from organic material and stuff. And I was like, okay, I can justify this. So I bought a dress, and I kid you not, it is the only item of Zara clothing that I have that has repeatedly broken and torn on me.
Really? Like,
oh my God, it's terribly made. Now, you know, everyone to their own in how you shop, but I have never shopped there again because I was like, do you know what? I was giving you a chance and I was just going for it and you just let me down, you know? So,
and I know that, I think that thing of like, oh, our eco range. But that means if you think about it, like if you're in like a court of law or something, technically they're saying that everything else is their own eco range. Do you know what I mean? Yes. I was like, you're actually
think about what they're not saying.
There.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so, yes, yes. Okay, interesting.
Anyway, moving on. There's so, another episode on that.
Another episode on that. So I chose for G, I chose Gulfstream. So I don't know if any of you guys who are listening watched the film A Day After Tomorrow, because I did.
Oh my God.
And it scared me shitless. Like I was like, no, this can't possibly ever
happen.
I was not
ready for that when that came out. That was a long time ago.
I know, I know. Well, this film is based off of a disruption to the Gulf Stream, so I just felt it was an important one to include. And we're not saying that A Day After Tomorrow. Yeah, I know. I didn't know. Yeah, I know. You're just kind of watching it because it's super dramatic, and you're like,
yeah.
And I think I watched it when I was like 12. I don't know. But anyway, we're not saying that this could happen, but it also, it's not possible.
Anyway. Look what's happening right now. I mean, anything can happen.
I know. So just to understand what the Gulf Stream is, I know a lot of us would have learned this in geography in school, but just a quick refresher. So the Gulf Stream is a strong ocean current that brings warm water from the Gulf of Mexico into the Atlantic Ocean, around Florida and up along the east coast of the US before crossing the Atlantic towards Ireland, the UK and Europe. But why is it so important to our climate? Well, the Gulf Stream stabilizes the temperature across the east coast of the US and Europe, keeping it warmer. When it does cross the Atlantic, some of the water turns south in the eastern Atlantic and some turns north. And the latter branch serves as a major heat source for the weather and climate of Western Europe. Great Britain and Scandinavia would be a lot colder if it weren't for the Gulf Stream. So according to an article I found from Columbia University, under human-induced climate change, the Gulf Stream is predicted to get weaker. It will flow more slowly and carry less water. And there's some evidence from measurements made over decades that this is actually happening. And if this were to happen, the lack of heat reaching the northwest of Europe would result in very harsh winters. So that's just a little bit of an explanation, not to scare people, but
Ireland is definitely in that stream.
It is. Yeah. There's a lot more detail that goes into just like the denseness of water, pulling it under, warm, cold, all this kind of thing. Yeah. But that just gives you a snapshot of the Gulf Stream and why it's so important. So we should care about what is happening to our Gulf Stream right now.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, just keep it.
Maybe we'll have a think about that. Okay, H,
talk to me.
Horticulture. So there's kind of like a parallel with horticulture and permaculture. So in the next episode we'll get to the permaculture, but horticulture is the agriculture of plants for food materials, decorations. It's all about the garden. So if you're a horticulturist, you can work in so many different forms because it studies both the science behind the garden and the aesthetic, which makes it appealing to look at. So, you know, they could design a garden in a museum or they could go maintain a garden in a community. But I think permaculture is more holistic. So we'll touch back on that. Mm-hmm. The next episode.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah, I'm definitely wanting to get more into my garden. Maybe not become a horticulturist, but just embrace my garden more.
Yeah, there's a huge movement for the growing your own. And
yeah. Absolutely. Okay, just a couple of more ones.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's just a little one, you know, just the IPCC. So, the IPCC stands for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's a United Nations body and it was founded in 1988. And they essentially, this group of scientists from around the world, evaluate climate change science. So it's comprised of representatives from 194 governments who review the contents of reports before publication, and they have to agree to the final text, which is kind of an amazing feat.
All of them.
So the process involves hundreds of scientists and draws from the work of thousands more. So they assess research on climate change and reduce it down. And I say reduce it down, and like I think the assessment report 4 was 2,800 pages, and that's them reducing it down. But they report on it every 5 to 7 years. So just to kind of give you a quick idea, it's produced in 3 volumes, each of which are prepared by a working group. So you have working group 1, and they examine the scientific evidence of climate change and the extent to which human activity is the cause, which is very important for us to understand that we are the problem. Working group 2 focuses on the impacts of climate change and how plants, animals, and humans can adapt, so adaptation. And working group 3 focuses on climate mitigation. So, you know, the research and writing and reviewing involved in each of the IPCC assessment reports can take several years. And I think one that we all remember was the special report on global warming of 1.5 degrees, which essentially told us what was going to happen to our planet if we get to 1.5 degrees warming. And it's really important just to note as well that this isn't, you know, this is just a guide for policymakers. And it really should frame decisions made by those in power in relation to climate change policies. So, and to be honest, if I was a policy maker, I would look to this if there are thousands of scientists from all around the world agreeing on this final piece of text. So that's essentially the IPCC.
I wonder how much it influenced our climate action plan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it did. It's referenced. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I know.
So much, Katie. Okay.
Go for it.
Last one.
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of wanted to put I and J together. So I, for me, was like intersectional environmentalism.
So important.
So important. So we kind of put it under J for a just transition. Okay. So a just transition is a set of principles, processes, and practices that build economic and political power to shift from an extractive economy to a regenerative economy. So the thinking is that if the process isn't right, then the outcome won't be right. So it has to be aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to quote the Climate Justice Alliance, just transition strategies were first forged by labor unions and environmental justice groups rooted in low-income communities of color who saw the need to phase out the industries that were harming workers, community health, and the planet, and at the same time provide just pathways for workers to transition to other jobs. So it was rooted in workers defining a transition away from polluting industries in alliance with fence line and frontline communities. So the environmental justice movement really grew out of a response to a system of environmental racism where communities of color and low-income communities have been and continue to be disproportionately exposed to like negatively with like hazardous pollution and industrial practices. So really this ties into the intersectional environmentalism, which in its simplest form is an inclusive movement that advocates for the protection of people and planet and bring to light injustices that are happening to marginalized communities and how it's connected to the earth. So like if you're a feminist fighting for women's rights, you better be fighting for queer women's rights and trans rights and like LGBTQ plus rights and Black lives rights, you know? So everything is connected, and really the kind of overarching thing is you can't have one without the other. And, you know, being silent is being compliant. So one thing I did learn is that the Green Party used to be called the Ecology Party.
No way.
Yeah, and they had a vision for like protecting the like the island like long term. So they were, their roots were in just transition. So wow. It was about protecting people and the planet. And I just thought that was quite nice. But you know, I think the Green Party need to step it up a bit on that.
Yeah, and I remember I feel like just transition is a really good one to end on as well, and just, you know, it's a word that we hear a lot about, especially in the environmental sphere. And it's a very easy thing just to say, you know, like, oh, we must have a just transition. It's bloody difficult to have a just transition, you know. So it's something worth fighting for. And I remember Mary Robinson saying, you know, it's a case of leaving no one behind in our move to a better world.
Okay, that's the best explainer. Leave no one behind.
No one behind. And I think in Ireland specifically, you know, there's so many different communities that this affects. But one that we want to tap into, and we will eventually get to that conversation with Farmer John, is, you know, Irish farmers. And that's something that's really interesting specifically, but it ranges. And we definitely want to speak more on that. But I think we should probably leave it there, Chloe. What do you think?
Good.
We've made it to J, everybody.
Tune back in next time. But what I think the overarching thing that is that climate justice is social justice. And that's a really good note to end on.
Yes. And everything leads to A. Activism.
Activism. Yes.
Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening again. We hope that you have enjoyed this educational episode, because we've learned a lot as well. And do make sure to share our episodes and follow us on Instagram at Climate Queens Podcast. And do like and subscribe and review us. Please do review
us. Tell us what you think, guys, because, you know, we have a bit of time now with our commutes. It's actually, that's really important. Our commutes are gone.
I know. So if you are listening to us and taking time out of your day that you ordinarily wouldn't, thank you.
That's very nice of you.
Yes. Okay. And thanks again to April, our editor.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. We love you.
We love you. Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Bye. Bye.